from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I want to congratulate the Grammy people on what they themselves called a pre-tell with dignity. The pre-tell meaning the pre-television ceremony where all the awards are given, because on television now they just have time for some performances, slapping some unlikely acts together. And they announced at the beginning of that ceremony a week ago, for the first time, we're going to have, ladies and gentlemen, a pre-tell with dignity. And since a movie I was involved with won a Grammy, I congratulate them on their dignity. Now to more timely topics, ladies and gentlemen, the question of where were you during Vietnam has reared its pretty little head again. And full disclosure, I have an interesting story about that myself, and it'll be in my book if I ever get around to writing it. Suffice to say, I didn't think the National Guard was my solution. But here's from the presidential press secretary this week, Scott McClellan. The president recalls serving both when he was in Texas and when he was in Alabama. These words are so carefully chosen. If you've read on the internet or seen on television any of these very contentious. The White House press corps is awakened, ladies and gentlemen, after their four-year slumber to discuss this issue, and very contentious press conferences this week in which Scott McClellan chose his words very carefully. Said the president recalls serving as opposed to recalls actually being on the base and signing in and doing work. Well, both when he was in Texas, I'm now quoting Scott McClellan again, both when he was in Texas and when he was in Alabama. And that is what I can tell you. And we've provided you these documents that show clearly that the President of the United States fulfilled his duties. And that is the reason that he was honorably discharged from the National Guard. The President said this on Meet the Press. You can't get honorably discharged. You can't get an honorable discharge if you don't do your duty. A recipient, a man who served in the Louisiana National Guard from 1978 to 1985, who faced two summary courts-martial, including one where he was charged with striking an officer, stealing a tape measure, and going AWOL, sorry, and was sentenced to 7 days in the brig. That gentleman, convicted D.C. sniper John Allen Muhammad, received an honorable discharge from the Louisiana National Guard, which just tells you that apparently you can go AWOL and still be honorably discharged. So That doesn't answer none of that answers the question, except now we've seen, ladies and gentlemen, we've progressed to the point where we've seen both Saddam Hussein's and George W. Bush's teeth. So we can, it is the information age. But chiming in on the subject of service during Vietnam, Colin Powell. You may not be familiar with this quote. Colin Powell, ladies and gentlemen, quote, "I am angry that so many of the sons of the powerful and well-placed and so many professional athletes managed to wangle slots in reserve and National Guard units. Of the many tragedies of Vietnam, this raw class discrimination strikes me as the most damaging to the ideal that all Americans are created equal and owe equal allegiance to their country." Unquote. Colin Powell, angry, wangled slots. Of course, the Bush administration has been saying any attack on George W. Bush's service is an attack on everyone in the National Guard now. Colin Powell, angry that the... Colin Powell didn't say that this week. He said it in his autobiography, My American Journey, published in 1995. Apparently he's been taking anger management courses since then. Hello, welcome to the show.
everlasting appetite to cash and plastic, a kill for the loon. I'll tag along. To the local coffee store, the menu went from the ceiling all the way down to the floor. Decaf, cappuccino, or latte, said the cashier. I said, give me a small cup of coffee and let me get the hell up out of here. Y'all know it's crazy. Oh, it's driving me insane. Superman, I just wanna go somewhere, use my hand. heaven. Hold on, real simple. Well, I don't wanna be a Superman. I just wanna go somewhere. Use my hands and keep it simple. Real simple.
I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to another edition of Le Show. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll boil it down for you. We'll keep it simple. American intelligence officials, before the war, were sifting through claims that Iraq had illicit weapons. They were generally not told that much of the information came from defectors linked to exile organizations that were promoting an American invasion. No, that's not me. That's senior United States intelligence officials talking to the New York Times this week. It's a page 10 story. I guess there was more important news this week than that. The claims of Iraq weapons included those from a defector who was identified as early as May 2002 as a fabricator by the Defense Intelligence Agency. So when David Kaye said we were all wrong, exclude the Defense Intelligence Agency, which called this guy a fabricator. Nonetheless, reports based on his debriefings, arranged by the Iraqi National Congress, found their way into documents and speeches used by the Bush administration to justify the war. He was just a fabricator, but that just means he makes something, right? The nondisclosure of the sources' connection to the exile organization was not an accident, ladies and gentlemen, lest you think that something went wrong. No. It was standard practice under the procedures in place at the time, according to intelligence officials. These are intelligence officials, so-called. That episode and others have prompted the Central Intelligence Agency to order a major change in its procedures. Operations officers will now be required to tell analysts more about sources' identities and possible motivations. That would be good, and that would help you to maybe evaluate the reliability of the information, wouldn't it? Before you gamble onto the battlefield? B-O-L, not B-L-E. The fact that undisclosed information about sources included not just names and titles, but even their links to exile organizations was described on Thursday by senior intelligence officials. An internal review of the way the CIA had handled pre-war intelligence on Iraq found cases in which a single source has different source descriptions, increasing the potential for an analyst to believe they have a corroborating source. Review had also uncovered cases in which a source was identified as reliable when the information had in fact come from a subsource about whom we knew little. That's from the CIA. So deeply held was the view that Iraq possessed illicit weapons within the intelligence community that it took American interrogators several months to concede that Iraqi prisoners who repeatedly said Iraq did not have such arsenals might be telling the truth. According to current and former intelligence officials, they denied there were weapons, and so we polygraphed them, a senior intelligence official said. And even when they passed, our first response was to say, wow, they're really good at deception. The persistence of a preconceived assumption, ladies and gentlemen, it's powerful stuff. In providing the most detailed account to date, senior intelligence officials said the defector in question, a military official, had been introduced to the Defense Intelligence Agency's Human Intelligence Service in early 2002 as part of a standing arrangement with the Iraqi National Congress. That group, backed by Ahmed Shalabi, had close ties to the Pentagon. And, oh my God, look at this, Dick Cheney. What does he have to do with any of this? The defector was debriefed in a third country, resulting in two intelligence reports in which the information he provided was described as credible. In keeping with standard practice, these reports and others involving defectors introduced by the Iraqi National Congress made no mention of links to the organization, even though it was openly promoting an American invasion of Iraq. During follow-up interviews, the Defense Intelligence Agency detected inconsistencies in the defector's account and concluded he had been coached by the Iraqi National Congress to provide information about Iraq's illicit weapons program. That prompted the intelligence agency to issue a fabrication notification. Who knew there was such a form? I'd like to get my hands on one of those. A fabrication notification in May 2002, instructing other intelligence agencies to disregard the defector's information as unreliable. But in what George Tenet, head of the CIA, describes now as a mistake, the warning was never linked electronically to the earlier reports. The defector's claims were thus included in both the National Intelligence Estimate of October 2002 and last February's presentation at the UN by Colin Powell, Mr. Anger Management. Isn't that cute? Isn't that cute? But hey, that's all the past. Why would we want to investigate that? More people who weren't wrong, according to David Kaye. Assessments provided to Australian Prime Minister John Howard stated that Colin Powell's pre-war address to the UN, quote, went beyond the available evidence in at least two areas. Intelligence agencies told the Australian federal government in the weeks before the Iraq war that some of the Bush administration's claims justifying an invasion were exaggerated. This according to one of Australia's most senior intelligence officials. These claims that went beyond the available evidence were included the mobile biological weapons laboratories and alleged links between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. The high Australian intelligence official who spoke to an Australian newspaper on condition of anonymity said the Australian government was told before the war that Saddam Hussein's WMD did not pose an immediate threat. Iraq's chemical and biological warfare capabilities were largely latent. The official said the threat posed by Iraq last year did not justify its invasion. Let's go beyond the bubble to Pakistan. The Pakistani scientist, did you see George Bush's speech this week? It actually was full of truthful information, which was newsworthy. He was talking about A.Q. Khan, the Pakistani scientist, the father of the Pakistani nuclear bomb, who was the head of President Bush put it at one point, a network of proliferation. The one fact that President Bush left out of that generally factual summary of what A.Q. Khan had been doing to proliferate nuclear weapons information and plans to Iran, Libya, and North Korea, he left out of the discussion the fact that the Pakistani government has pardoned A.Q. Khan, given him a complete and blanket pardon. That'll teach him. Man, that'll serve as a warning and a deterrent and the rest. Khan is refusing to hand over potentially incriminating documents demanded by the Pakistani authorities. The documents and a tape-recorded statement, which are said to demonstrate that senior Pakistani army officials were aware of his proliferation, are believed to have been smuggled out of the country, we told you this last week, by his daughter, Dina, who lives in Iraq. Isn't that wild? Pakistani intelligence officials said that Dr. Khan first agreed to surrender the documents in return for the blanket pardon, but has now failed to do so, having gotten the pardon first. That was smart. Here's a pardon. Where are the documents? Oh, wait, we should... They believe his daughter is prepared to disclose the contents if legal action is brought against him by the country's military government. Blackmail is such an ugly word. We prefer Pakistan. He is under house arrest. Restrictions on his movements are being tightened. But he likes that. The city of Fallujah was where that big explosion happened over the weekend. Earlier during the week, Fallujah's police chief told the British newspaper The Telegraph that his recruits were still waiting for the Americans to supply them with essential equipment. The coalition has provided only 40 portable radios and 48 protective vests for a force that numbers 2,000. Some policemen had to bring their own guns to work because those provided by the coalition were of such poor quality. How many civilians have died in Iraq so far? More than 10,000, many of them women and children. According to a group called Iraq Body Count, the most authoritative organization monitoring the human cost of the war, they only count those who've been counted by at least two independent media sources, not counting Ahmad Shalabi. A year ago, Paul Wolfowitz testified before Congress, predicting that post-war Iraq would be an easier job than Bosnia or Afghanistan, hey, Afghanistan is going so well, too. Check it out. We've forgotten them again. Anyway, Paul Wolfowitz said this would be easy because he said there's no ethnic tension in Iraq. Somebody got to buy that guy a book, I think, me personally. News, ladies and gentlemen, from inside and outside the bubble. But now, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the apologies of the week, and they are many and lovely.
We're so sorry.
Yeah. Sorriness is rampant on a field of apologetics. The Sunday Mirror of London. Following our article of November 16th last year, David and Victoria Beckham have asked us to confirm that Victoria did not tell David to leave Spain or that their marriage was over. David did not refuse to back down, and far from being in ruins, their marriage is very strong. The Sunday Mirror apologizes to them and their family. Representative Lynn Woolsey, Democrat of Petaluma, California, has apologized for writing a letter in support of a man convicted of raping a 17-year-old girl. Woolsey wrote the letter on congressional stationery on December 2nd on behalf of Stuart Pearson, whose mother works in her San Rafael office. Senator John Kerry raised the hackles of the Sikhs with a remark that was seen to equate the community with terrorism, has issued an apology and set the record straight. The apology by Kerry came just when the issue was threatening to snowball with a host of Sikh organizations up in arms against the remark. While holding forth on terrorism, Kerry had spoken of acts of terrorism by the likes of the IRA in Northern Ireland, the Basque separatists in Spain, and the Sikhs in India. In his clarification, Kerry said his reference was only to some terrorist groups which had invoked Sikhism in the past. I realize that, like me, the vast majority of Sikhs in the United States and the worldwide abhor terrorism.
Sorry.
Expressing regrets for the imprecision of my statement that led to the misunderstanding, Kerry said, I'm deeply sorry for the offense caused by the comment. Conservative television news anchor Bill O'Reilly said this week he was now skeptical about the Bush administration and apologized to viewers for supporting pre-war claims that Iraq had WMD. He said he was sorry he gave the U.S. government the benefit of the doubt that Hussein's weapons program posed an imminent threat. I was wrong, I'm not pleased about it at all, and I think all Americans should be concerned about this, O'Reilly said on Good Morning America. What do you want me to do, go over and kiss the camera? Asked O'Reilly. Apologies are rampant in broadcasting. Don Imus apologized this week for saying, who cares after an Iranian airline crashed last Tuesday, killing 43. It's probably not something to kid around about, Imus told his audience. I apologize to the Iranian people who were offended. Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin Mayor Colleen Crocker McMillan admitted last week she doesn't hold a bachelor's degree from the University of Wisconsin, despite claiming publicly in the past she did. I apologize if I said something that wasn't true. I took credits toward a bachelor's degree, she said Wednesday. I will retract saying I ever had a degree. I thought I had taken enough coursework. See, you go to a ceremony when you graduate, Mayor. You get a certificate and everything. Charging that he had bullied constituents and leaned on regulators to help a proposed tire-burning plant owned by his father-in-law, a citizens group in Minnesota is calling for an ethics investigation into the conduct of southeastern Minnesota State Representative Greg Davids. He apparently told the mayor, in trying to get the tire-burning plant built, I got junkyard dog-killing attorneys from Chicago that will rip their eyes off and pee on their brains. He acknowledged he made inappropriate comments and has made a heartfelt apology. Canada's government Friday condemned a show by a U.S. late-night television host, Conan O'Brien, that insulted people in French-speaking Canada and seemed to suggest that everyone in the province was homosexual. Ottawa and the province of Ontario paid $1 million Canadian dollars, that's nothing, to help O'Brien bring his show to Toronto for a week to boost the city's profile after the deadly SARS outbreak last year. But the federal government said O'Brien had gone far too far with the show broadcast Thursday in which he went to Quebec. We want to dissociate ourselves from the comments which were broadcast last night because we do not support them in any way, said a government minister. At one point in the show, Triumph, the insult comic dog, said to a Quebecer, you're French, you're obnoxious, and you no speak a English. It told another, I can smell your crotch from here. That's classy. That's nice. That's sophisticated humor of a late night type. We offer our apology and assurance that it is never our intention to air programming that offends any of our viewers, said Chum Television, which broadcast the Conan O'Brien show to Canadians. The Thai government has held a Buddhist ceremony to bless the spirits of more than 26 million chickens that have been slaughtered in recent months to halt the spread of bird flu. Government spokesman Prompal Sad Elam said, "We feel guilty because we're Buddhist. The ceremony can make us feel relaxed and apologize to the souls of the dead chickens." The chief executive of American Airlines has apologized after the pilot of a recent cross-country flight got on the intercom and asked all Christians aboard the plane to raise their hands. This says the pilot's name has not been made public, but of course it has been. He asked all Christians aboard to discuss their faith with their fellow passengers. "Let me assure you, we take this very seriously and are conducting a thorough investigation," said chief executive of American Airlines. Indian groups are calling for a boycott of the CBS television network and the Grammys after last Sunday's broadcast of the rap group Outkast, who performed their song Hey Ya while dressed in fake and garish Indian attire. CBS, through a spokesman, said the network is very sorry if anyone was offended. It's been a good week for CBS. Les Moonves, take the rest of the week off.
Baby, you can say I told you so. And if I ever hurt you, you know I hurt myself as well. Is that any way for a man to carry on? Do you think I want my loved one gone? I love you more than you'll ever know. I wasn't making much money. You know where my paycheck went. I brought it all home to you, baby, and I never spent a red cent. Is that any way for a grown man to carry on? Do you think I want my loved one gone? I love you more than you'll ever know. More than you ever. Now listen to this. I'm not trying to be. No, I ain't. Just any kind of man. I'm just trying to be somebody who you can love, trust, and understand. I know that I can be a part of you that no one else can see. But I've got to hear you say, I've got to hear you say, it's all right. Yeah.
I'm only flesh and blood, but I can be anything that you demand. I could be king of everything, or just a tiny grain of sand. Is that any way for a grown man to carry on? Do you think I want my loved one gone? I love you more than you'll ever know. And you ever know.
Ooh. It's Newsmaker time here on Le Show. The Newsmaker line is occupied with a young man who has, I believe, been at the farthest boundary, or at least the newest boundary of so-called reality television. And he's got quite a story to tell, a show that he participated in, which apparently at this point is not going to be aired, but we'll get into all that with him. His name is Tyler Michael Tucker, and he was, I guess you'd say, the star of a reality show called Dead in 2 Months. Tyler Michael Tucker, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Harry. Thank you for having me on.
How are you feeling?
Big fan of yours.
Thank you. How you,
Well, I'm okay. I'm all right, actually. As you know, Harry, this whole brouhaha began when I was cast to play myself, but I had to pretend that I was dying in 2 months. And
mm-hmm.
One of the nutty ironies of this whole thing is that I've come down with a situation where I've been using zinc nose inhalers a lot, and I've lost my sense of smell. You might have read about it, that a lot of these cold nasal sprays to prevent a cold, you can't lose your sense of smell.
Really?
I throw that out there as kind of a crime stopper health-wise to
huh.
your listeners.
Wow, yeah. I had not been aware of that.
Yeah,
but
that's a new thing. I just throw that out there.
I appreciate that. So this would go into the health file. But you're an actor, is that correct?
That's right, I am. Uh-huh.
And what's your background? I mean, the producers of this broadcast, I guess, discovered you somewhere?
They discovered me. James Joffe, who did a couple of different reality shows,
mm-hmm.
none that actually aired. They produced a show called Splash about aspiring lingerie models who would jump off buildings
wow.
for modeling contracts. And
yeah.
that one actually coincidentally also didn't air. One of the young gals who aspiring models is now has one of those monkeys to get her stuff because she unfortunately was paralyzed from the waist down and.
Oh.
So they've kind of had a bad luck. This was going to kind of turn the tide for them a little bit, but
uh-huh.
as you know, we're having a little trouble with this, which is why I'm so grateful that you're having me on.
Well, I'm grateful for you being on.
The network, which shall go unnamed right now,
okay.
is kind of holding back
uh-huh.
the debut of Dead in 2 Months. And what was the question?
I guess the question was, where did the producers find you?
Oh, well, as you know, I was an actor. I am an actor, and which
mm-hmm.
is why I did this whole thing in the first place.
Really?
In my effort to get an agent, and as you well know... you need a job to get an agent. You can't get an agent if you don't have a job.
That's right.
All that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Anyway, I was appearing in this in a play in the theater on Yucca, the Nina Foch Theater.
In Hollywood.
In Los Immigrants, which was an interesting thing. You might have heard about it, because I know you're tied into the whole off Yucca, Broadway, off-Broadway theater stuff that's happening out here that's so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
this is a show about immigrants, and our director, kind of method, would use real illegal immigrants in
wow.
the show.
Wow.
And I played an INS guy who, every night, kind of a cute story, I would be killed by one of those gasoline-powered leaf blowers.
Yeah? Killed how?
Just, you know, they would come at us, you know, symbolically walk towards the audience with these gas-powered leaf blowers and blow them at the audience. Although the fire department wouldn't even let us use that. Long-winded story,
yeah.
I know I'm a little off subject.
That's okay.
Just, you might get a kick out of knowing that we lost cast members almost every night to immigration because they were all actual illegal aliens.
Wow. So every night it was like working with a whole different group of
people. A lot of understudies.
A lot of understudies. So the producers found you there. They said, we have this new show called Dead in 2 Months. And what's the premise of the show?
The premise, quite simply, Harry, is that for 2 months, if I could convince everyone I knew, parents, girlfriends, whatever, that I was dying of a disease, I would get $1 million. And also kind of, you know, money, as wonderful as that is, more about showing my skills as an actor, trying to break through, you know. I've been in L.A. for quite a while. This was a wonderful opportunity for me. I'm not just one of these kids starting out. I've been around the block a little bit as an actor, and this was a great opportunity for me.
Yeah. So they would follow you, and you would convince everybody around you that you were dying of a disease. Did they give you...
We have a disease, which is an actual disease, although we were going to reveal this at the end. It's called coprophagia. We told people it's a blood disease. Actually, it's a disease, not a disease, it's a kind of a...
Syndrome, isn't it?
Syndrome.
Yeah.
That dogs get when, and I don't know if you want to...
I think I know what it is.
Do you know what that is?
Yeah, I think I do. And I think...
It's when dogs will eat their own waste?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And...
How do you know that?
We don't have to go into that.
Okay.
So the assumption is that nobody in your family, none of your friends would know what that disease is.
Nobody would know, Harry,
yeah.
And I kind of had a, you know, talk about committing to a character, which was myself. I mean, I couldn't let my parents know. We had actors playing doctors on it.
Wow.
Wonderful actors. John L. Turner, do you know him?
I do not.
Wonderful guy. Wonderful. He died of cellulitis on ER about, season 3, I'm not quite sure when. Anyway, he played my doctor on this thing. Got convincing as heck.
Yeah.
The cameras, my parents were told they were just doing a documentary on me as a young actor trying to make it in Hollywood.
Sure, that's believable. Evidently,
I came down with this disease. They decided to keep on filming.
I see.
But we actually have a scene there, Harry, and this is wonderful video verite, if you will. When I actually, with the guy playing the doctor, my doctor, breaks the news to my actual parents.
Wow.
Heavy.
Yeah.
Entertaining as hell.
Yeah.
But heavy.
Yeah.
I tell my father and mother that I have about 2 months to live. I got to really fill the moment.
Sure.
Which is an acting term for just committing totally. You know, you might have heard about this already. I might as well just say it.
Yeah.
My father had a massive stroke.
Oh, my God. No, I didn't.
Terrible, terrible. He's in a vegetative state.
I had no idea.
And I'll tell you what. If people say, but when was the one time? How hard was it to keep this going for a couple of months?
Yeah.
That was the roughest moment for me.
Well, I can imagine.
I wanted to just say, no, Dad, no. It's a bit. It's a thing we're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
But by that point, he had the stroke.
So why compound it by making him feel foolish?
Also, one of those things also, Harry, you know, where you play a character. I don't know if you've done a lot of theater, but...
I have not.
Where you, in a where you're just kind of in that zone...
Where you become the character?
It's me, whatever.
So you became Tyler Michael Tucker with 2 months to live.
Right.
Yeah.
By the way, there is a Tyler Tucker... was in the guild already. I know you didn't ask me this, but that's why I just added, which is my middle name, Michael.
So that's why you're Tyler Michael Tucker.
Tyler Michael Tucker.
It's nothing pretentious or anything. So how your father is now still in that vegetative state?
It's, you know, and all the best medical minds that I can find say that probably would have most likely...
Would have happened anyway?
It would have happened anyway.
Yeah, okay. So they don't blame the...
They said, don't blame myself, and I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
No, you don't need that
burden. There.
You don't need that burden. Are you... Yeah. You're not thinking of suing the producers, are you?
Oh, gosh, no.
No.
No. I mean, they gave me a big shot here, and I guess I'm kind of convinced, you know, I don't want to toot my own horn or whatever, but I guess this kind of, like, shows people, all the people who said that I played results in acting school, well, I guess I can cut it, you know?
Yeah. So why isn't the show being broadcast?
Well, the word got out a letter writing campaign got started. I don't even know how this happened. You know, Harry, with the internet now.
Yeah, I know everything.
With the internet.
Yeah.
Apparently, word got out. They, you know, there was a kind of a backlash.
Mm.
Hey, you see people eating worms,
mm-hmm.
but so terrible about pretending to die. So the network says their backlash had nothing to do with the pre-backlash. I mean, normally you think a show should be on for there to be a backlash.
Yeah.
This is kind of a preemptive backlash,
so
if you will.
So this is a front lash.
It's a front lash. There you go.
Yeah. See? I just thought of that.
That's good.
So they're just...
I'm going to use that one.
Okay. You can use it. They're just holding off on it? Have they canceled it?
They're just holding off.
Yeah.
They banked it.
Yeah.
We got 13 of them in there.
Yeah.
They're exciting and they're fun and they're campy and they're sexy. Not campy, but they're sexy.
Well, now you say sexy. A lot of these reality, so-called reality shows now, like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette
right.
and The Bachelorino, they're sort of dripping with sexuality. But I can't imagine how that would have.
You want to hear about dripping, Harry? They have a wonderful house that they built for us. Cameras all over the place. Cameras in the yin yang.
Wait. They built a house for you.
Built a house because I'm also with these six gals, bachelorettes, if you will, who think that I'm the grandson of Sam Walton.
Oh my God!
Listen to this, because you'll love this. Because you're with the funny and the cute.
I love that.
And
yeah.
The nutty.
Mm-hmm. The wild.
I think I'm the grandson of Sam Walton.
Yeah.
I don't believe in prenups, and I've got 2 months to live. Well. Katie barred the door.
Yeah.
And it's forget about it.
Wow. So.
I'm going to say this, too, that I think a lot of these gals, after a point, you forget about that. And I think they kind of genuinely like me for myself. You know, although I am more of a character guy.
Than a lead.
Lead, second lead, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Now, were these weren't actresses, though?
Well, some of them wanted to be actresses.
I see.
Some of them were models. Some of them were a couple of the gals who were in Splat, you know, were the ones about, with the lingerie gals.
Yeah. That made it okay out of Splat.
Contract. Again, I'm not slamming the producers. That was not the most well thought out of them all. That was just one single episode, which didn't really work out, and it was a horrible, unfortunate.
No, episode. We don't have to dwell on that.
This one had everything going, and I guess what I'm trying to do is, you know, I'm trying to build a little bit of a groundswell to get this thing on the air because it's just good, clean fun, and it's
You don't want to, excuse me for interrupting, you don't want to give away the what happens, whether you get the $1 million or they get wise.
No, I'm not allowed to do that. And also, they kind of closed us down before we got there.
Oh.
They did. And if the good Lord willing and the creek don't rise, we kind of were able to get up and running a little bit. We'd shoot the last 9 of them, and we could.
Well, but wait. I mean,
everybody's still kind of waiting. Oh, are we going to go back? You know, people are kind of holding off.
But now you're doing these interviews, don't they? Doesn't this sort of tip them off that what's going on?
You know what? That's I'm sure that's going to be fine.
Okay, Tyler. In the meantime,
yeah.
You're a working actor, I assume. So,
right.
What are you doing? You know, for food at this point? Are you doing other kinds of work?
I am working presently because, and again, I think there's nothing wrong with just simply making a buck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working at Home Depot now.
That's great. That's a great place. I like that place.
Rancho Cucamonga, and I'm working in the electric saw area there. You want to come in, I'll fit you up with a nice saw in the ceramic tile. You know, Harry, you got to wet the tile before you cut it. I don't know if you know that.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know any of that either. It's wonderful to be kind of, you know, be a civilian briefly.
Yeah.
While I'm taking a respite with the, because I don't want to take a long-term acting thing in case we kind of get back into gear with the show.
Of course, you don't want to take like a Broadway thing.
I would take a Broadway thing.
You would?
Yes, indeed, you do. I would.
Okay. You wet the tile. What do you mean? You just sort of.
Well, this is how knowledgeable I am about things of this nature. But you know, when you cut a tile, you got to have a great saw, but you also have to wet the tile as you're cutting it. I don't know exactly why.
But you mean just put water on it, or?
Water adapter thing that wets it.
Yeah. You don't wet the saw, you wet the tile.
You could, I guess you wouldn't want to wet the saw. You got to wet the tile. So I don't know, it makes it easier to cut.
Okay.
This home improvement thing is a, whoa. I guess I can't figure out if there was the need for all this stuff, and then they made this stuff, or there was all the stuff, and people said, well, we should get the stuff.
You know what it sounds like to me, Tyler?
What's that?
This home improvement stuff is going through the roof.
That's right.
That's just a little cute thing I just thought of.
Cute.
So where else have we seen you on television in anything before?
I don't know what airline you fly on. I don't want to give anybody a plug, but mm-hmm. you might have seen me sitting behind the lady that pulls the oxygen mask for her daughter in the American Airlines flight.
Of course.
Instructional video.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm like, how do I fit this seatbelt? Oh, it's hard to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
You might have seen that.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
That's very good work.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you were really good in it.
Well, if you noticed me, I almost wish you hadn't noticed me because I wanted to just look like a passenger, you know.
Well, but I'm saying, I thought you were a passenger.
Yeah.
That you just really had me there.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Listen, praise from Caesar, my friend, because I love what you do.
No, thank you. Anything else we might have seen you in?
I guess that's about it.
Okay. Let's get back to this reality show for a minute. When the producers approached you, aside from Splat...
I thought they were kidding.
Yeah, of course.
I thought they were kidding. Well, you know, you wait, you wait, you work, you know, and I'm not fresh out of acting school. Mm-hmm. As I say, I've been working in my craft for a long time.
Tyler, how old are you, if I may?
I'll be 37.
37?
Mm-hmm.
And what's your range?
I can play 80.
Wow.
Right, and I have schooled myself with the makeup. I can make mm-hmm. up my hands.
Mm-hmm. So, but I was on my way to asking when these producers approached you, and you thought they were kidding, but aside from Splash, which, as you say, was this one-shot reality show, what else had they done? Anything that you'd heard?
Not a whole heck of a lot. They were the comptrollers on Survivor.
Uh-huh.
And they broke away from that, which was a wonderful payday. And you got to admire them for trying to forge their own road, really.
Yeah.
They were really basically just writing the checks for the crew and mm-hmm. below the line.
Mm-hmm.
But here they found an opportunity to kind of go with their own, by their own lights,
mm-hmm.
and make their own show. And so this is kind of a wonderful new kind of thing that they were doing, coming out of Survivor, the Survivor family.
So you were kind of buying into their dream.
Hitching my hiney to their dream, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Now, given their Survivor background, was your home filled with a lot of flame and things? Because Survivor, I've always noticed, is a show that has a lot of flames in it.
A lot of tiki-oriented.
Yeah, yeah.
No, not really. I mean, they played that down. To me, you know, with these folks, it wasn't, you know, it's like, what am I doing tomorrow? Mm. Not like resting on their laurels at all.
Yeah. What are they doing tomorrow?
They're really... just in a wait-and-see attitude. They're not a whole heck of a lot.
I see. So a lot is riding on whether Dead in 2 months gets on the air.
That's why we're mounting this campaign. I'm telling you, Harry, it's swelling up. It's happening. It's people want to see this. People want to see this because it's dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
It's good, sexy fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, life and death.
Yeah. Have you kept in touch with the girls at all?
I have tried. I have put an effort out there.
Yeah.
A lot of them are busy.
You sent out feelers, did you?
I did. What do you mean, like?
Just calls.
Oh yeah. Yes, yeah. I have called.
Yeah. And they're busy otherwise.
They are gals who are forging their own careers, mm-hmm. and they're wonderful young ladies.
Well, God bless them.
I think the world of them.
Yeah.
And they're great. A lot of them travel.
Mm-hmm.
One sells pharmaceuticals.
Was there any female bartender among them? Because I think that's a kind of a sexy thing that they...
No, not that I know of.
Yeah, because these reality shows always find the sexy female bartenders, which
they do.
Yeah.
What is that?
I don't know. I like that.
Here's another point, and this has nothing to do with why I think I'm trying to get this going and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But in order for them to come up with the million, the show has to air.
Of course.
So we're left kind of like, whoa, you know...
Did you get any payment for doing this? I mean, have you gotten scale or anything like that?
I got scale.
Yeah, okay.
That's right. I got after scale.
Yeah, so now you're on unemployment waiting for the...
I am on unemployment, but I have another couple of months of coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, when I'm having a lot of dental stuff going on. You know, you neglect your teeth, you're making a hell of a mistake.
That's right. Do they still pay you in 50s?
I just get the check, you know. Well, it goes right to the doctor.
Oh no! But
how do you get yours?
Huh? I don't get unemployment.
Okay.
But didn't they used to just give you 50s? And you could tell who was on unemployment.
Oh, you get a check. But the great thing is you don't even have to go down there anymore.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you can do it all on the
Apple, internet.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Although I miss going down there. I used to see a lot of actors. That
sure.
I know.
Sure.
I used to see Iron Eyes Cody. You remember him?
Sure, the Indian.
Uh huh.
Was he always crying?
Actually, he was Italian. People don't know that.
Really? Was he always crying, or was it just that one?
He was always crying. He had, yeah. He was, you know, well, you want to cry because it was like you'd wait.
Yeah, of course. But that wasn't just like a weepy eye.
I don't think so.
Okay. Tyler Michael Tucker, we wish you all the best with Dead in 2 months.
Harry, you are fantastic to give me a forum, and I appreciate it. That's all I can say.
Well, you know, I like and love and support actors and reality television and the whole deal. So,
well, people might as well accept it. There'll be no writing at all pretty soon, and it's just fantastic.
Mm. So you had no lines. Nobody suggested anything.
I made up my own.
Wow.
You know, I just was in that place where I just knew my character so good, and I just went with it. And you know, I would be very depressed. You know, we'd have a little thing which was a stand-up MRI that I would go to every night, close myself in, and talk to the camera.
Wow.
Stand-up MRI. I don't know if you've seen those.
No.
They're wonderful. You don't have to lay down.
Yes. Do you have to do like comedy?
No, I would just say, well, here's what happened to my day. There's
I see. Not, when you say stand-up MRI, I thought that maybe you had...
Oh, you mean like a stand-up comedy?
Yeah. You had
No. This is a thing that, well, I would be telling every day, okay, Gwen thinks I'm... One of the gals' name was Gwen.
Uh-huh.
Gwen thinks I'm... I think I almost blew it today. I'm not sure, you know. And I had to lose... Harry, I also had to lose 35 pounds.
Wow.
But Robert De Niro in Raging Bull did the same thing.
Well, he...
So
no,
I kind of had him as an inspiration.
No, yeah, but he gained 40 pounds.
Did he?
Yeah. In the stand-up MRI, Tyler, did it make that noise that the MRIs...
I don't think so. I don't think it was actually... It was practical, as
I
they
see.
Say. I don't think it actually was plugged in.
I see.
The camera was plugged in. That was my little kind of, oh, go in there and, you know, open up your heart and tell the folks at home what's really going on. You
That's
know,
such
how
a
they always have those little...
Yeah, yeah. That's such a cool concept. Well, as I say, we wish...
Again, exactly. I mean, wouldn't you like to see that?
I would love to see. I would love to see a shot in an MRI. You know, I don't think I've seen that.
Either have I.
Yeah. So, Dead in 2 months is the name of the show. The network.
You've been so kind to put me on your website with a link. If people want to see it, hey, go to your website and just say, please let us see. Give the people what they want. I guess is what I'm saying.
I guess that is. Yeah. But it's not really on the website. It's just on the radio show. But they can find...
Whatever.
Okay. Tyler Michael Tucker, we wish you great success. And I guess we'll be looking for you in that... if we don't see you at the Home Depot down in Rancho Cucamonga, we'll be looking for you in that passenger seat just behind the woman in the American Airlines seatbelt video.
Thank you much, Lee Harry.
My pleasure. Tyler Michael Tucker, ladies and gentlemen, on our Newsmaker line today here on Le Show. Ladies and gentlemen, from the buried lead department, way down at the bottom of a story from Knight Ridder newspapers this week about Iraq, this little tingler. Central Intelligence Agency officers in Baghdad have reported to the Home Office their own fears that Iraq is on a, quote, glide path to civil war, unquote. That wouldn't be the lead. That would be just at the bottom, and they, you know, glide path to civil wars. Wouldn't bother anybody. Because there's no ethnic tension there. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. And girdling the globe via the internet at two different locations on your computer whenever you want it. HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com. And it would be just like
Colin Powell staying not angry, if you'd agree to join me then. Would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show playlists are almost always available at the newly refurbished harryshearer.com. On today's broadcast, the part of Tyler Michael Tucker was created and performed by Tom Leopold. My thanks to Bob Dunn, who's getting out of town, for his invaluable, that means valuable, right, help in making today's Le Show heard around the world. Look for him. He'll be in your neighborhood. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.